Welcome to the fourth quarter 2014 earnings analyst call. My name is Ellen, and I will be your operator for today's call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I will now turn the call over to Brad Alexander. Mr. Alexander, you may begin.
Good morning, and welcome to FMC Technologies' fourth quarter 2014 earnings conference call. Our news release and financial statements issued yesterday can be found on our website. I would like to caution you with respect to any forward-looking statements made during this call. Although these forward-looking statements are based on our current expectations, beliefs, and assumptions regarding future developments and business conditions, they are subject to certain risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results to differ materially from those expressed in or implied by these statements. Known material factors that could cause our actual results to differ from our projected results are described in our 10-K, 10-Q, and other filings with the SEC. We wish to caution you not to place undue reliance on any forward-looking statements which speak only as of the date hereof. We undertake no obligation to publicly update or revise any of our forward-looking statements after the date they are made, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise. I will now turn the call over to John Grimp, FMC Technologies Chairman, President, and CEO.
Good morning. Welcome to our fourth quarter 2014 conference call. With me today is Marianne Seaman, our CFO. I'll begin my comments today focusing on our performance both in the fourth quarter and for the full year. I'll then discuss our current 2015 market outlook. Marianne will provide specifics on our quarterly and full year financial performance and our financial outlook for 2015. And then we'll open up the call for your questions. 2014 was a very successful year for FMC Technologies. We achieved record revenue and operating income in both our subsea technologies and our surface technology segments. Company earnings were 72 cents per diluted share for the quarter and a record $2.72 for the year. This excludes the gain related to the sale of our material handling business and represents a 30% increase over our prior year performance. Marianne will provide further detail on two items that impacted our earnings. Company revenue for the quarter was $2.2 billion, taking our full year total to $7.9 billion, an 11% increase from 2013. In subsea, we successfully executed our significant backlog. Our focus on execution that began 4 years ago has greatly improved our ability to perform well at a much higher activity level. Subsea revenue, for example, has almost doubled over the same four-year period. We've also benefited from the growth of our subsea service business. The strategic focus we've placed on service has resulted in the development of a sustainable source of growth while raising our margin profile. Again, our focus on execution delivered solid fourth quarter subsea margins at 14.5%, and our full year margins averaged 14.2%, a 260 basis point improvement from last year. Fourth quarter subsea orders totaled $1.7 billion. Bringing our full-year total to $5.5 billion. This resulted in a book-to-bill ratio of 1.2 for the quarter and 1.1 for the year. The total includes our announced awards for the Chevron Agbami project in Nigeria, the ENI 1506 award in Angola, and the Wintershall Maria project in Norway. Just as significant, our margins and backlog increased again in the quarter. Surface Technologies' fourth quarter revenue was $584 million, driven by the strength of our international surface wellhead business and our North American fluid control business. Our international wellhead business continued to deliver exceptional results. We've established a significant market presence in the Middle East that's enabled us to maintain a solid backlog while continuing to improve our margins. Our North America fluid control sales activity was strong for the quarter, as order activity held up until December. Overall, our quarterly segment margins of almost 20% are the highest we've delivered in 2014. Turning to 2015, we're responding to the slowdown in our industry as a result of the severe declines in oil prices. We will leverage the momentum of our execution improvements and the strong year-end backlog from Subsea and Surface International. We're responding quickly and significantly to the slowdown in our North America businesses by reducing discretionary and capital spending. Most impactful, we have begun the process of reducing headcount company-wide by approximately 10%. The most significant reductions will come from North America, where rapid activity declines are occurring in this short-cycle market. We are also using this as an opportunity to strengthen our subsea cost position. The improvements to processes we made in our subsea business have not only improved our quality and on-time performance, but they've improved our efficiency. These efficiency gains have positioned us to deliver a level of activity in 2015 comparable to 2014, but with a smaller, leaner subsea organization. Again, we expect to leverage our execution momentum and strong backlog to not only successfully manage through the downturn, but emerge stronger in the recovery. Regarding our outlook for subsea orders, we do not expect our 2015 subsea orders to be as strong as 2014. As we've previously discussed, many of the larger awards we had expected this year are in Africa. Historically, these awards involve national oil companies and have a greater propensity for delay. And in today's current environment, the risk of project delay is now greater. Although subsea projects are proceeding, including the awards we received in the fourth quarter, most operators are reassessing their project portfolios, looking for ways to achieve significant cost reductions. This is a process that began last year before energy prices began falling, and the importance has now become much greater. FMC Technologies has been and continues to be active and directly involved in the reevaluation of projects, particularly with our partners. As a partner, we're proactive in proposing alternative approaches to project development that includes adopting cost-effective FMC standards, early acceptance of new technologies, and different business models that reduce the total cost of development. An example of our success in standardization is the 20,000 PSI 350-degree standard specification for subsea equipment accepted by a multi-operator consortium. Our investments in technology focused on the production system offer a step change in savings on equipment costs. Through our unique partnerships, we have the ability to be involved early in design concepts that can optimize the full field development cost. And in today's environment, operators are much more open to different approaches that can result in significant reduction to their development cost. Shifting now to surface technologies, we're now experiencing the effect of the significant slowing in the North America land market. The U.S. rig count has fallen by almost 500 rigs since the middle of November. We anticipate this decline continuing over the coming months as oil and gas prices have fallen past levels that support most current activity. We're now taking actions to address the reduced volumes we'll experience in 2015, and we're confident these steps will allow us to effectively manage through the downturn, while at the same time not sacrificing our ability to adjust when the cyclical market recovers. Our North America Surface Technologies activity should remain, our non-North American Surface Technologies activity should remain healthy in 2015. We've continued to grow our market position internationally, most predominantly in the Middle East, and expect that backlog that we've built will help us maintain revenue levels similar to 2014. Customer activity outside North America is typically more resilient through market cycles, but we're prepared to take action should we see markets soften beyond the current expectations. In conclusion, the performance in 2014 delivered record results, but it also established positive execution momentum that will enable us to successfully overcome the challenges in the current market. We're taking early and meaningful action to stay ahead of the decline in activity. Deep water and shale remain an important source for oil over future decades, and as a result, continue to be an important part of operators' portfolios. To develop these assets requires forward-thinking approaches, and FMC Technologies is proactively engaged with our partners, working on new ways to successfully reduce development costs and improve project returns. Mary Ann will now take you through some of the financial details in the quarter and for the full year and provide a more detailed explanation of our 2015 expectations.
Thanks, John. Our fourth quarter diluted earnings per share were 72 cents. Included in the quarterly results is $26 million, or 9 cents per diluted share, of foreign currency losses due to the further strengthening of the U.S. dollar. Fourth quarter operational performance was strong across all of our three segments. Subsea revenue was $1.4 with operating margins of 14.5%. Surface Technologies revenue was $584 million with operating margins of 19.9%. And Energy Infrastructure revenue was $138 million with operating margins of 9.9%. Other revenue and expenses included $25 million, or 7 cents per diluted share, of cost associated with actions taken to de-risk our defined benefit plan. These actions were forecasted. Let me provide further detail on the segment results. Subsea Technologies operating profit was $208 million in the fourth quarter. Operating profit improved 12% year over year, when excluding the $23 million of recognized revenue and operating profit associated with an adjustment for Angolan withholding taxes included in our 2013 results. The improving margin profile of our backlog, along with the efficiencies gained from the actions we have taken to improve operational performance, played a significant role in our full-year margin performance. Additionally, we have benefited from the continued growth of our subsea services capabilities. Subsea inbound in 2014 was $5.5 billion and provides a solid base for 2015 revenues and profit. Surface Technologies generated fourth quarter operating profit of $116 million, as both our fluid control and surface wellhead businesses' activity levels remained strong throughout most of the fourth quarter. Surface wellhead sales for both the fourth quarter and full year represent new records. Fluid control, fourth quarter operating income and margins were strong, and sales remained at high levels through the majority of the quarter. However, completion services fourth quarter sales activity was flat sequentially, and operating income was down due to disappointing activity in the Canadian market. Orders for Surface Technologies for the quarter were $498 million. Orders for international wellhead continued to remain at strong levels, but order activity began slowing for both North America fluid control and surface wellhead. Backlog now stands at $654 million for this segment. Energy Infrastructure generated fourth quarter operating profit of $13.7 million. Now for the corporate items, corporate expense in the quarter was $18.5 million. Other income and expense net reflects expense of $46.9 million. This includes the previously discussed charge of $24.9 million, or 7 cents per diluted share, of costs associated with actions taken to de-risk our defined benefit pension plan. This also includes foreign exchange losses of $26 million, or 9 cents per diluted share, due to the further strengthening of the U.S. dollar. Capital spending this quarter was $121 million, primarily directed towards Subsea Technologies infrastructure and service asset investments. For the full year, our capital spending was $404 million. We repurchased approximately 2.5 million shares of stock in the fourth quarter at an average price of $47.79 per share. For the full year, we repurchased 4.9 million shares at an average cost of $51.01. At the end of the fourth quarter, we had net debt of $670 million. It was comprised of $639 million of cash and $1.3 billion of debt. Looking at 2015, we have reasonably good visibility of revenues and operating profits for our subsea business, given the backlog of $5.8 billion. In Subsea Technologies, we expect full-year revenue of $4.9 to $5.1 billion. This estimate reflects a few changes in assumptions from earlier estimates. A strong U.S. dollar impacting 2015 projections by approximately $300 million, a reduced amount of book and turn revenue given a lower 2015 inbound expectation, and a flattish year-over-year service activity. With the current margins in our backlog and the level of execution we expect to continue delivering, we are confident in our ability to attain average subsea margins for the full year of approximately 15%. Moving to our Surface Technologies segment, while difficult to project given the current pace of rigs coming out of the U.S. market, our Surface Technologies revenue will fall from 2014 levels. With our large international backlog and our strengthened market position, we expect to have another strong year in international surface wellhead, with performance similar to 2014. For our North American business, we are currently assuming a U.S. rig count reduction between 700 to 800 rigs from last year's peak. At this level, we would expect Surface Technology segment revenue to fall between 15 and 20%. In fluid control, we are seeing reduced activity and therefore expect volumes to decline sequentially in the first quarter, with continued weakening in subsequent quarters given the recent slowdown in orders due to reduced activity levels. Activity levels in surface wellhead North America and completion services will follow similar patterns. Headcount reductions commensurate with current inbound volume have been completed, and additional plans are in place to further reduce headcount in response to continued weakening in the market. We will take actions as appropriate for order inbound levels to protect operating margins. Full-year margin estimates in Surface Technology we expect to be down between 400 and 450 basis points from our 2014 average if rig counts fall by 700 to 800 rigs. In Energy Infrastructure, we should see increased revenue in 2015 with margins in the low double digits on higher activity levels in our loading systems and measurement solutions businesses. In addition to the restructuring John and I discussed relating to both subsea and surface technologies, we are actively renegotiating supplier contracts across all of our businesses to lower input cost. Regarding corporate items, we expect corporate expense to average approximately $15 million per quarter in 2015. Other expense net should average $15 million per quarter in 2015, subject to foreign currency fluctuations. We expect our interest expense to average $8 million per quarter. We anticipate our 2014 tax rate to range between 30% and 32% for the full year. We expect capital spending in 2015 to be approximately $300 million. The majority of our 2015 non-maintenance capital spending will be directed toward profit-adding subsea service business investments. In conclusion, our subsea performance should continue to be strong as we execute our backlog and generate service revenue at a level consistent with 2014. Operating margins in subsea technologies should increase to approximately 15% in 2015. Resulting in flat year-over-year operating profit. Our subsea technologies businesses will be challenged in North America, but with a strong international presence, we think we can deliver revenue between $1.7 and $1.9 billion. We are forecasting our international surface wellhead business to remain at levels consistent with 2014. The North America business will, however, experience significant year-over-year declines. Overall, the segment will see operating profits decline at least 30% from 2014 based on our stated range of U.S. rig count reductions. Corporate costs should be relatively flat to 2014, and net expenses will be lower as certain costs incurred in 2014 will not repeat. Overall, we expect to deliver solid financial performance from our non-North America land businesses. We will make the structural changes necessary to minimize short-term margin impact while protecting longer-term growth strategies. Operator, you may now open up the call for questions.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone phone. Please limit your comments to one question and one follow-up question. If you wish to be removed from the queue, please press the pound sign or the hash key. If you are using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, please press star then one on your touch tone phone. The first question is from David Anderson with Barclays. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks. Good morning, John. I'm not sure if I caught this, but did you put out a number for thinking about what the order book's going to look like for 2015? Did you even, I'm not sure if I heard a range.
No, there was not a range. I specifically said that we did not expect 2015 subsea inbound orders to be as strong as what we experienced in 2014. So we expect them to be less than what we saw in 2014.
Okay. Now, you had talked about kind of the three components within the Subsea Technologies division of orders out of, you know, we have the backlog revenue, book and turn, and services revenue. I was wondering if you could just kind of help us understand kind of how you think those three components kind of work out, really kind of over the next kind of 18 months. Does the services revenue, I mean, is that, I know we have a part of the light well intervention, which I would think to hold up. So is the decline in services kind of more related to the installation on the backlog portion, on the kind of revenue out of backlog? And also, could you just comment on the 55% turnover ratio? Is that, are you still thinking the 55? It sounds like that's a little bit lower than you're originally thinking.
Yeah, Dave, let me talk about service, and I'll let Marianne talk about the conversion rates. Our subsea services inbound in the fourth quarter was the highest for the year. We actually believe the subsea services number will hold up quite well. Where we're going to see a fall off is in the North Sea, and you've heard some of the actions that Statoil has taken. So we see if there's going to be a fall off in services, it'll come in the North Sea. But by and large, we think the subsea services, which is a strong margin business for us, is actually going to hold up pretty well. Other than the comments in the North Sea, it's going to hold up pretty well in 2015. I'll let Marianne talk about the conversion rate.
Yeah, David. So as you know, we've got backlog sitting at about 5.8. We're expecting conversion somewhere in at about 50% to 53%. You know, as we look at the service business year over year, initially we were expecting some stronger service revenues from 2014. Our first quarter will be soft, and we're seeing that being impacted, as your question earlier, coming really from light well intervention. The installation still remains pretty strong. So about 53% conversion, and then subsea services about flattish, and then in the balance is a small book and turn assumption, just sort of given what John said, somewhat of the uncertainty around 2015 inbound.
The next question is from Bill Herbert with Simmons & Company. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning. John and Marianne, can you talk about use of free cash flow and as it relates to the buyback? The buyback in the fourth quarter was probably the biggest I've seen in several years. And at least in my model, with estimates which are quite a bit lower than the street, you still generate very healthy free cash flow. So can we talk about capital allocation and commitment to the buyback? Should we see more assertive repurchase activity relative to the past few years?
Bill, this is John. I'll make a general comment and then turn over to Marianne. We were pleased with our free cash flow in 2014. We made good improvements in working capital, and obviously we had the earnings. You know that a lot of the investments we made over the last 4 years increasing our capacity are starting to wind down. So it made sense that our free cash flow, which we successfully generated in 2014, would be directed at stock buybacks where we believe the stock's been undervalued. So that was the thinking there. And I think you go forward in 2015, Marianne commented in her comments that we see CapEx appropriately down, and we expect with the revenue number and our continued improvement in working capital that we'll continue to generate strong cash flow going forward. And as long as the stock price remains where it is, and we'll continue to view that as undervalued, I would expect and do expect that our buybacks will going forward will probably look more like they did in 2014. I'll let Marianne comment, though, more on the free cash flow and use of cash.
Yeah, good morning, okay. Bill. So, clear as John said, we're expecting, even with the estimates that we've just provided, with stronger cash flow, improved cash flow performance in 2015 over 2014, you're right, your memory is correct. This is the largest buyback that we've done since 2007, 2008, a little bit difference in the price. We repurchased a little over 15.7 million shares in 2007 and a little over 11.4 million shares in 2008. So we continue to see this as a very opportunistic way to return cash to shareholders. And given the valuation right now, we believe strongly in the share repurchase. We're sitting on about 8 million shares remaining at the end of the year on our authorization.
Very good. And then secondly, with regard to Brazil, all the turmoil that's taking place with Petrobras, should we be concerned about the Petrobras backlog at this stage, or do you see that kind of converting at a relatively orderly pace going forward?
Bill, we believe our Petrobras backlog is secure. Our execution performance on that backlog has been excellent. Our relationship with Petrobras, I don't think, has ever been stronger, and that's not going to change. There is clearly uncertainty within the Petrobras organization. Everybody's well aware of that, and how it plays out, we'll see. But the backlog's secure. Our relationship remains strong. Don't envision, I mean, I'm sure there'll be, you know, some moving around of the backlog a little bit, but right now the backlog's secure and our relationship with Petrobras remains strong, and I don't envision that changing.
The next question is from Elyse Lohr with Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Thank you. I wonder whether you could share with us the kind of discussions that you're having with your key customers at the moment. They all made it very clear that they want to bring their costs down, and in the process of that, take a pound of flesh out of the oil field services industry. So to what extent are you negotiating delays of projects in your backlog? To what extent are you are they aiming for price rebates? And to what extent are you trying to negotiate with them to change or standardize their work practices so they can take ultimately costs out through better execution?
Good morning, Ollie. First of all, you can appreciate that we are engaged with all our customers, particularly our partner relationships. I don't think there's a single one where we haven't had exactly the kind of conversations that you're discussing. But let me describe the nature of them. First of all, we believe our subsea backlog is very secure. There have been no conversations about delaying deliveries, no cancellations, nothing of the nature. The conversations are very direct. Given the and remember, some of these conversations, I talked about it in the last quarter, have been going on for over a year, and that's the declining returns for E&P companies for several years is a huge concern to our customers. That's now heightened, and those conversations are more intense with the change in oil price. Our customers are telling us that they need to make a step change in the development cost of their deepwater portfolio. They realize, at least our customers realize, although there's lots of pricing pressure, they realize they can't get there just by talking about price discounts and so forth. We need to be talking about something more substantial, which means we've got to start working. The industry as a whole needs to start working differently. The conversations center around standardization. As you know, our company has been particularly successful in driving FMC standards for our partners, most notably in the achievement last year of getting four operators to agree on a single spec for next-generation high-pressure, high-temperature equipment. I think the acceptance of standards by our customers now greater than it's ever been as a result of their determination to drive down costs. And we think we're in a terrific position to offer the kinds of low-cost, efficient standard designs that they're going to need to improve their returns. The second thing we're talking about is with the operators is a faster adoption of new technology, particularly new technology that makes a step change in the cost of the hardware and the entire production system. FMC has been proposing for some time unique technologies that directly lower the cost of their production systems, and we're getting a lot, not only just a lot of interest, but I think real commitment to proceed with these new technologies, which will make a step change. And then finally, particularly with our partners, there's a recognition that something has to change. This can't be incremental. We can't just roll up our sleeves and work harder and shave things around the edge. We've got to do something substantially different if we're going to expect a significant change in the development costs. And there's a real recognition that some of our business models are going to have to change. We're going to have to think a little bit differently about the entire scope of the development, not just the individual components and how they're integrated and fit together. We've demonstrated to these partners that there are compelling cost reductions for the entire system if we'll change the way we approach the development of these projects. And I mentioned this in my prepared remarks, it absolutely is going to require that our company, the contractor, participate very early in the initial designs and concepts that the operators are using. Because of the many partnerships we have, we're uniquely positioned to participate early, and the operators that we've talked to are now, really for the first time, encouraging us and encouraging their organizations to let us participate early so we can really deliver the step change the industry needs.
Well, thanks for that, John. I would imagine that there's going to be some relative winners and losers. And other than the alliances, what is it that makes you confident that this is just not going to be a general cost reduction across the whole industry, but something that you can really, as an organization, benefit from relative to your peer group, sort of beyond your alliances, which, of course, give you a tremendous head start?
Right. What gives me confidence is as you pointed out in your earlier comment, we are engaged in open discussions unlike anything before, and the conversations we're having with our customers is about a recognition that we have to have a step change in costs. It can't be incremental. It can't be 5%. It can't be 10% savings. And I think they recognize that if the kind of traditional, we're in a down cycle, let's squeeze costs, you can't get there. And so we need to talk about that. We know there's going to be some pricing pressure. Everybody needs to sharpen their pencil. But if the conversation isn't more than that, they know they won't be able to improve the returns. And that's what gives me confidence that the operators are likely to adopt at a faster pace some of the alternative approaches that we're proposing. And as you said, our alliances give us the entry to have those conversations with these customers.
The next question is from Douglas Becker with Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Thanks. John, appreciate your expectations for orders to be down in 2015 for subsea, just given the industry backdrop. Is there still potential for Bonga to be awarded this year? And if that's the case, would we see orders up if that played out?
Right. Let me just kind of take it from the top, Doug. A quarter ago, I talked about the long list of projects. That long list of projects, it still exists. Projects haven't been completely shelved. Project teams haven't been asked to stand down. They're still being worked. Some of these projects are proceeding, and you saw that in our fourth quarter inbound. There were three projects, one or two of them, really, we were expecting to happen in 2015, and they got accelerated into 2014. There are other projects, even some in West Africa like Bonga, that appear to be proceeding. But we should expect that virtually all the projects on this extensive list that we originally thought would be inbound in 2015 are going to be reevaluated. The pace of that reevaluation, it's unknown. I mean, they're all going to be reevaluated. I think based on the operator's intent to try to improve their economics, I'd like to think that most of them are going to go forward. But the timing of that reevaluation means that some orders are going to still land in 2015, but others are going to end up in 2016. As each of the operators go through this evaluation process. So to answer your more specific question, yes, it's possible that Bonga continues to proceed at the pace we've been watching it and gets awarded in 2015. But it's also likely other projects that have been proceeding along are going to go through a reevaluation process. And if that evaluation process takes longer, those projects could very well move from 15 into 16.
No, that's helpful. If we think a little bit longer term, has anything changed from more of a secular standpoint in terms of the growth rate you'd expect for trees or more broadly subsea equipment? Could we see a compound annual growth rate in the high single digits for orders on a secular basis?
I think for some time we have we've been estimating that the future growth rate of conventional subsea equipment would be in the high single digits. And, you know, again, as I said, based on the project list, based on the inventory of undeveloped deep water discoveries, those growth rates are quite achievable. It's not going to be a smooth linear line, and so we're going to see some volatility in that growth rate. And a lot's going to depend, again, on the pace at which these projects are reevaluated and they're allowed to proceed and get sanctioned, obviously in a different, you know, in a different design concept. But the pace at which they get reevaluated and they get sanctioned will get us back on that growth curve. But, again, just looking at the inventory of deep water discoveries that have to be developed, that high single-digit growth rate is still achievable in the deep water sector.
The next question is from Bill Sanchez with Howard Weil. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning. Marian, I wanted to circle back on the conversion out of backlog and subsea this year and the percentage you outlined on the call. FMC's historically been around 60%. I know 14 was expected to be a lower year just given some of the longer lead time orders booked in 2013. I guess I'm a little surprised as to the percentage being as low as it is in 15. Maybe could you talk a little bit more about that? Is FX having an impact on that to some extent? And could you give us an idea? I know 16 is still a ways out, but the conversion factor, should we see that moving back to more of a 60% level in 16? If you could help us with that, it'd be appreciated.
Sure, Bill. So first of all, you're right. You know, historically we have seen higher conversion rates. Keep in mind, part of that conversion rate has to do with the size of the backlog and the makeup of the backlog. You know, the greatest component of our backlog right now is actually Petrobras. And as you know, that Petrobras business has a longer tail. So in part about the conversion for this year, we are actually seeing a little bit of a slowing coming out of Petrobras. What was initially going to be in 2015, they've asked us now to shift a small portion of that into 2016. So no overall change in the total, but rather a shifting from 15 into 16.1. You know, you talked about the FX conversion. That $300 million that I talked about really had to do with looking at the average rates in 2014 to 2015. So that $300 million is really off of what our, you know, our previous estimates. And then our subsea service business, you know, we're expecting it to be a little bit slower. You know, one of our customers, largely in the North Sea, has expressed some OPEX slowing, and, you know, we're seeing some slowing of that as well. Go on to 16, as you say, you know, obviously it will depend on the timing and the size of 2014. And if we can get, you know, depending on the timing of when that order comes in, we certainly can see revenues in subsea in 2016, again, depending on the timing of that inbound, to be flattish with 2015. If we are, you know, fortunate enough to see toward the back half of the year, as John talked about, all of the reworking of those projects come to fruition, then there certainly is an opportunity to see growth in that 2016 subsea revenue number.
Okay. Marian, can you help us just in terms of the first quarter subsea margin expectation? I know we typically see some seasonality in the North Sea and the shorter cycle businesses, if you will, I guess affecting that margin negatively. Order of magnitude, fourth quarter to first quarter, I mean, the overall expectation of 15% average, I'm still assuming you're going to be down 1Q with some sort of recovery in 2Q forward.
Yeah, Bill, I think sort of what you saw the happening in prior year changes, so Q4 of 2013 to Q1 of 14, will be a similar profile to what we would expect to happen here. So although we do not have two of the light well intervention stacks like we had last year for recertification, we are seeing some slower activity in the first quarter. So you can assume a similar profile in Q1 of this year like you saw Q1 of last year.
The next question is from Scott Gruber with Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. I want to follow up on Ole's question regarding improving the cost structure offshore. How long do you think it will take for the industry to make those step function changes and project development efficiency? When I think about it, on the one hand, cycle times are long in the deep water, but on the other hand, it's simply a case of survival for some companies. So, John, how do you think about timing with regard to those step function changes?
Scott, in our conversations with our partners, there is a real sense of urgency. They are anxious to get on with developing their deepwater portfolio. And so I think you're going to, I mean, based on the reaction we've seen, we've seen our partners, after proposing some of our ideas, whether it's technology or a different business model, essentially almost on the spot make a decision that they're going to rework their project around that different approach. I know one example on some new technology. The project was very close to being sanctioned. All of the design concepts had been largely decided, and the head of the subsea organization had a chance to review our proposed technology. And I mean, essentially within weeks, they made the decision to adopt that new technology. So, I mean, that's just an example, but it gives you it sort of illustrates the urgency in which the operators realize they have to rework these projects. So this isn't about years. And we saw that, you know, even last year, even before the decline in oil, you saw Total's Block 32 Kayombo project. It wasn't years that it took them to rework those projects. It was, I think in that case, just a quarter or two. So I think given the urgency now and their openness to change, I think the operators are prepared. I hope they're prepared, and I think the way they're signaling to us is they're prepared to make these step change decisions fairly quickly.
And do you think the overall yield on those efforts in aggregate, you know, from a high level, can improve project economics in the 20-25% range, you know, at least similar, if not in excess of what the shale producers are targeting onshore in the U.S.?
I definitely believe that we're in that range, and the operators are looking for numbers of that magnitude. I think, you know, anything significantly less than that, we're talking about incremental change, and that's not going to do it. And I think that's what the industry is coming to grips with, and it's what our company understands. Just rolling up our sleeves, working harder. We have to look even beyond the, you know, how we define scope of work, because we got to get at the total field costs if we're going to make these significant changes that people are looking for and that are needed in order to improve the returns.
The next question is from Jeffrey Campbell with Tuohy Brothers. Please go ahead.
Good morning.
Morning, Jeff.
First, I wanted to ask you, yesterday, Statoil indicated that it had chosen an unmanned wellhead platform concept for its Phase 1 development of the Åsberg project, citing cost reduction versus subsea. This occurred to me as sort of a regression from the earlier days when putting as much production as possible on the seabed was seen as a money saver. Is this a unique instance limited to the North Sea, or could this be part of a larger trend?
I think it's unique. I don't think it's part of a larger trend. Statoil has been quite consistent in their vision for the future, and that's everything on the seabed. That hasn't changed, and in our recent comments, conversations with Statoil, that remains intact. So I would say that's definitely a unique situation and not the vision that Statoil has expressed to us consistently.
Okay, good. That's helpful. And further on trying to reduce project costs, some in the industry have suggested that potentially large fields should be developed more incrementally to reach production sooner as a way of managing costs. Is there any evidence of this sort of thinking in your conversations with your clients?
Yes, we worked on one project with one of our partners, and the original project design had significant upfront investment, particularly around the infrastructure in preparation for future phases. And they reworked that project by taking those investments for future phases down, leaned it down to just the requirements for phase one. It made a step change in the investment and improved the return so they could proceed with that project. So I think that's definitely one of the different approaches that the industry has to take.
The next question is from Byron Pope with Tudor, Pickering, Holt. Please go ahead.
Good morning.
Morning, Byron.
John, in thinking about your leadership position in the deepwater Gulf of Mexico, it certainly sounded like the subsea services part of your exposure there should hold up fairly well, and clearly the long-term JDA will progress. I'm just curious as to what your customers are thinking in terms of 2015 activity, some of that book and turn work that you tend to get in the deepwater Gulf of Mexico, and how you feel about the outlook there.
Well, with regard to services, Byron, in the Gulf of Mexico, we think it's going to hold up, because remember, we've got almost $6 billion of subsea backlog that's going to get delivered, and it has to get installed. So that's why we're pretty confident. I mean, other than, as Marianne mentioned, other than the North Sea situation, this equipment's going to be delivered and it's got to be installed. So that helps support solid Gulf of Mexico service revenue related to the backlog of equipment that has to be installed. But we also we're also quite confident based on the conversations we're having with customers. And as you know, our fourth light well intervention stack is en route as we speak to the Gulf of Mexico. We've had really good customer acceptance of the idea. We didn't expect any long-term contracts or pre-commitments, just the nature of the Gulf of Mexico. But we're quite confident that once the vessel and the stack are available, which will happen in the second quarter, that we'll be signing contracts. That system is very compelling to the operators, and based on their reaction to that system entering the Gulf of Mexico, we're confident that will contribute to revenue service revenue growth in 2015. And then non-service, but our partners, and you suggested that we do have a very strong market position, mostly driven by our partners in the Gulf of Mexico. With the Gulf of Mexico's large existing infrastructure, it's common for there to be smaller project awards, satellite well step-outs. Now, they'll come under the same scrutiny as a large project with regard to improving returns, but probably not as intense. And we're hopeful that the smaller projects in the Gulf of Mexico will, in fact, materialize in 2015. They tend to be a little shorter cycle in terms of the awards. And therefore, and probably will be able to, if they even go through a reevaluation process, it'll probably be a little bit faster than a big multi-billion-dollar project. So you combine all that, and we're pretty confident the Gulf of Mexico, of all our regions, will probably hold up as well or better than other parts of the world.
Okay. And then, and just a second unrelated question. As I think about the organizational changes that you put through in your U.S. surface business, well, surface wellhead business about a year ago, I'm assuming that the reductions to headcount is just reacting to the activity as opposed to necessarily changing the strategy in terms of how you approach the U.S. surface wellhead business going forward, coming out of the downturn.
Absolutely. We, and I think both Marianne and I cover that in our comments, Byron. We're going to take early and significant action, but we're not going to jeopardize the strategy we've put in place. And one important strategy for us is our approach to the North America land market. The reorganization that we did a year ago was pivotal for that change. The new technologies that we're introducing, the acquisition of flowback services of a year and a half ago, these are all part of our strategy to strengthen our position, to differentiate ourselves in the North America land business, and that doesn't change. I mean, there'll be a recovery, and during that recovery, we want to emerge stronger. And we've taken steps to implement our strategy to do just that. So these headcount reductions really are independent out there, responding to the downturn in the market.
The next question is from Rob McKenzie with Iberia Capital. Please go ahead.
Good morning. I guess question for you, John. Coming back to the pricing question a little bit, can you give us a feeling for how much you expect to give up in terms of pricing concessions, and how much of that may be offset by concessions you get from your vendors, as well as a commentary as to how we should see that play out in terms of timing?
Well, so far we haven't seen much, but there haven't been many awards that have been made. But just like the last downturn, we expect some pricing pressure and greater competitiveness as we, stare at some softness in the market. Let's start with our backlog. I said in my prepared remarks that not only do we have strong inbound orders and a book-to-bill of 1.2 in the quarter, we also increased our margin and backlog. So for FMC, we haven't seen a decline in margins. Clearly, our customers are asking for concessions and discounts, but they understand that there's limits to that, and we're having conversations with them. But I don't expect significant concessions, particularly on the orders that we've received. Going forward, the competitive environment's going to be a little tougher, and we'll see the impact of a slower market in the pricing of bids that are tendered. Having said that, just like last time, we will see the supply chain costs come down, and we'll see that partially offset some of the pricing pressure, and hopefully we'll be able to hold on to our strong margins that have been represented in our backlog for the last year and a half.
Great, thanks. My follow-up is, I guess I'll shift gears to the surface business, if I may, a little bit, focusing on fluid control. I don't know if we've talked a lot about that this quarter or this call. You know, one of your bigger customers, Baker Hughes, is going to be acquired by Halliburton, who I believe, you know, does a lot of their own fluid control internally. How are you thinking about, A, how that affects your business going forward after the downturn, and B, more broadly in that sector, you know, that's been North American levered, do you expect to see additional drivers there helping to drive that segment in the next upcycle?
Let's start with the Baker Hughes Halliburton. You know, both companies are important to FMC. I'm sure Halliburton makes their own well service pump, but most of their treating iron, the WECO Chicksand product line, it's bought from FMC and has been for decades. So Halliburton remains an important customer of FMC. BJ Services, before they were acquired by Baker Hughes, was an important customer to FMC as well. Again, we're selling them treating iron, swivel joints, WECO Chicksand product line. But we also had made roads with Baker Hughes in terms of our well service pump. But remember, the well service pump is a small part. We were relatively new to the industry on the well service pump, so it's not a big portion of our business. That's going to be Halliburton's decision how they integrate Baker Hughes into Halliburton and what they do in terms of rationalizing the equipment that they use. But on the primary product of fluid control, the flow line, we sell to both companies. So I think the way we look at it is there may be some downside just in the consolidation of the two companies, but there could very well be upside. Going forward, when we get to a recovery, our fluid control business, recognizing the importance of improving efficiency in developing shale, they're developing products and services to do just that. And I think fluid control will continue to contribute to the successful development of shale and improving the cost efficiencies as they contribute to the industry. So I think they'll be part of the change that has to take place in shale to improve efficiency.
The next question is from Kurt Hallead with RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning.
Morning, Kurt.
Got a lot of great color, and I want to kind of get your perspective, collective perspective, and do a comparison and contrast on how you mentioned some elements about margin and pricing and potential dynamics in 2015 as you book these orders, cost reduction by the customer base, all that stuff. You compare what you expect to see maybe in 15 and 16 to what transpired in 2009 and 2010, because I know as we all look back and do these comparisons that the margin pressure and the pricing pressure was very severe in that period. So can you help us? What's your view of what's going to happen vis-a-vis what happened in 2008, 2009?
Right. I think it makes a lot of sense to look back at the last downturn, and it serves as an example of what we can expect. So I would say, Kurt, particularly on those projects that are tendered, these would be outside of our partnerships, we're going to see competitive pressure that will drive the pricing down. And I think it'll look a lot like what we experienced in 2009 and 2010. I think some of the differences to compare and contrast, I think we have more partnerships today, more alliances, more frame agreements today than we did in 2008 and 2009. And it's in the context of those partnerships, not that there aren't pricing concessions in those partnerships, but the nature is very different because those projects aren't tendered, so we get to negotiate any changes in the pricing structure, and it has a real effect on margins, a positive one, I would say, in the context of negotiating with a partner. So we have more partnerships going into to this. I would say our relationships with our key customers is also stronger because of our execution performance, and that's helpful when you're going into a downturn and negotiating prices. And then finally, our own performance. You'll remember, I think you remember in 2010 and 2011, we were struggling with growth, and that had an impact on our ability to execute. It had an impact on our costs. Remember, we had a lot of people, brand new people that weren't as efficient. We go into this downturn very differently than we did in 2009 and 2010. Our execution performance has never been better. Our relationship with our customers has never been better. And the maturity of the investments that we made in those 2009, 2010 is very different. Those new employees that we brought on in 2010 and 2011 now have 3 and 4 years of experience behind them. Their efficiency levels are much higher than they were when we went through that last downturn. The investments we've made in processes, in capacity, those are all behind us now. We are operating successfully, performing well at an activity level that's almost double of what we were 4 years ago. And that's going to matter in terms of our net earnings, because our execution is going to be better, our cost base is going to be and the structure is going to be better. So we go, although 2008 and 2009, what we learned from that downturn, I think will be an example of what we're going to experience this time. We go into this downturn very differently.
Got it. Hey, that's great color, John. Thanks. Now, one other follow-up, if I may, on the surface front. Could you just give us a refresher on what percent of the business in 2014 was international surface versus North America?
Yeah, so our international surface business, sort of in rough numbers here for 2014, is about 45% of the total of Surface Technologies, the balance being largely North America.
Our last question will come from Marshall Adkins with Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Morning, Mary Ann. Thank you again for the detail. Just one clarification to start out with. You mentioned that the sequential subsea margins in Q1 are going to have a profile similar to Q1 of last year. I presume you're meaning the degradation in margins of roughly 200 basis points is going to be similar, not that the margins will be similar to Q1. Did follow that correctly?
You followed that correctly, yes. I was talking about the degradation from sequentially. You're absolutely correct.
Right. Well, that's just what I wanted to make sure. Last question for the call. You guys have had a heck of an improvement over the last 2 years, improving efficiencies, improving throughput, et cetera, et cetera. With this downturn, help me understand what happens to those efficiencies. Do they continue to get better, or do we get somewhat less efficient as you're laying off people and things like that?
Marshall, this is John. No, we absolutely believe that the efficiency improvements that we made, particularly in subsea, over the last 3 to 4 years, not only are they sustainable, but we're going to be able to continue to build on them. In my prepared remarks, I talked about this downturn is an opportunity for us to really improve our cost base, streamline the organization, and we're going to take full advantage of this opportunity. So our expectation is the improvements we made, not only are they sustainable, but we build on them going through this downturn.
I will now turn the call over to Brad Alexander for the closing remarks.
This concludes our fourth quarter conference call. A replay of our call will be available on our website beginning at approximately 2 p.m. Eastern today. We will conduct our first quarter 2015 conference call on April 22nd at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. If you have any further questions, please feel free to contact me. Thank you for joining us. Ellen, you may now conclude the call.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.